thinking of the ending of our first full day together in this retreat. Just recollecting how that is. A little over 24 hours ago, we began this retreat. Noticing what that perception in the mind, how that affects us. We've been practicing together for a day and for a night. Just noting. Noting that the experiences we had during the day are now memories. The moments where it seemed very hot. Where we seemed very tired. Where the various strong or intense moments. Just what are they now? Acknowledging as it is a memory, just as we can recognize and with awareness know the sound of a dog barking at night. We can recognize the memory of breakfast, the memory of what we had for breakfast this morning. Of the sitting and the walking during the day. And what will happen tomorrow? What perception, how does that perception impact the being tomorrow? How will tomorrow be? It's not occurred. It hasn't happened. Because it's the future. It's not happened. So just recognizing that we can know speculation about the future as speculation. We don't know. It's not happening. Can we a little bit relax with that? I don't know. But know a thought of the unknown of the future in the same way as that we recognize a memory of what happened this morning or what happened yesterday as we met together for the first time. Teacher used to every day encourage us to reflect that yesterday is a memory, what is past is a memory. Tomorrow is the unknown. We don't know how it's going to be. But now is the knowing. In this moment, now, within this awareness, can recognize a memory when it comes and subsides. We can recognize a speculation about what might be. And today we've been encouraging ourselves to not excessively dwell on the past. Memories might arise, we recognize them. But encouraging us in this particular practice, this cultivation of a single, unified, gathered presence. Encourage us when memories arise, recognize them. But to be able to say thank you, but let it be. Not out of aversion. Sometimes it really is appropriate to really reflect on, ponder memory. Later in the retreat, perhaps we'll have a chance to do that. But what we're doing in this particular practice is learning not to compulsively have to get hijacked by every memory that comes along. Or hijacked. Do you know the word hijack? Kidnapped. Caught up with. Hijacked by speculations about the future. What might happen. What we might do later. Again, it's not that there's anything wrong with that. There's a place, a significant place for consciously intending the mind, reflecting on the direction we're going in. There's nothing wrong with that. But when it's unconscious, someone was asking today about awareness, when the strength of our presence of mind or our awareness, what the Buddha called sati, which is a special kind of awareness. It's not just being alive. I mean, every being has some kind of awareness. But sati, or heartfulness or mindfulness, is awareness that appreciates. It appreciates what is. It's awareness that's rooted in being with the suchness of things, the as-isness of things, the truth of things. When our awareness is not very strong, then we get hijacked by memories and we spin around, he said this and she said that, or we're longing for a time that used to be, getting involved in things, not really consciously, hearkening back, maybe because the present's not easy to be with, maybe we're haunted by memories. And then sometimes we get hijacked by speculations or anxieties or worries about what might be. How are things going to go? I mean, for example, in this country, it's a powerful speculation. How are things going to go? Very powerful and compelling thought. With all the worries about how it might go this way or that way. And not only Israel, the whole world. Africa, we regularly wonder, how's it going to go? How's it going to go as we look around us? But notice how when the awareness is not very strong, we're kind of not recognizing that we don't know. Mind spinning around thought after thought, or hearkening back, not really rooted in the strength of how it is, knowing things as they are. And though there really is a place for reflecting on the future, pondering the past, in this particular practice on this retreat, we're not hating the future, we're not hating the past, but we're developing some options. We don't want to be compulsive. There's a word compulsive, meaning we have no choice. Memories come, we get swept into them. Speculations come, we get swept into those. Skill at samadhi means also being able to say thank you, but I'll just let you be there. Don't worry, I'll give you attention later. Not pushing it away, not fighting it. But to be able to, and this is very powerful, to be able when a thought comes up, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Can we actually say, I don't know, don't know? can we be at ease with not knowing? Not knowing what's going to happen, but we do know. We do know that's a speculation. We know that. We recognize that. I don't mean knowing with some kind of intellectual thinking. The heart awareness can know, can experience a speculation about the future. We just know it's the future. Letting that be. For the sake of what? For the sake of not avoidance. For the sake of cultivating a solid place in the heart. What's called a citta, what the Buddha called a citta viveka. A refuge in the heart. So that whether we're on the moon, whether we're in the desert, whether we're in the city, whether we're on retreat, whether we're in Africa, whether we're in America, whether in Israel, then one has a citta viveka, one has a place of refuge in awareness, an abiding, an easefulness. When the consciousness is always moving back and forth between the past and the future and skimming across things, that's a certain kind of consciousness which is functional. It allows us to do significant and important things. But we experience something different when we actually cultivate allowing the heart to be single, to be unified, to be gathered. Not racing this way, not racing that way. We discover something, a brightness, a fullness, an ease that doesn't belong to a place. It's something that is said wells up from the heart. And so as we cultivate on this retreat, these first few days, I encourage us to trust ourselves. Trust ourselves. In these first few days, we're going to experience the momentum of all the way that we've been living. Or as a good friend of mine, ours, the abbot of a monastery in England, the abbot of Chithurst Monastery, his name's Ajahn Sujito, he describes these first few days as being eyeball to eyeball with your karma. Means you're eyeball to eyeball, means you're just kind of, it's sitting there looking right at you. And you know, it's not like way over there in the corner. I mean, eyeball to eyeball is pretty close. It's just right there. Look. And so what does that mean? All of our accumulated restlessness, all the tendencies in our daily life to avoid maybe that which is uncomfortable, to when things become too challenging, sometimes we just go dull, sometimes we crash out, sometimes we lift off above it. Whatever the tendencies we have, when one stops, I mean the body has driven to Galilee and entered retreat, and but still the heart has that momentum. The word momentum, is that familiar words? Like if you're driving a car, you take the foot off the accelerator. But if you're going 100 kilometers an hour, you're still moving. Even if you put the brakes on, there's still the inertia, there's still the movement forward. If you put the brakes on too hard, you just skid, lose control. So we're slowing down with the help of the silence, with the help of the community, using the structure of sitting, walking. But still the nervous system, the speed of our thoughts is still, for some of us, is still moving very fast. That's why this part of the retreat, it's very important to be very kind and not judgmental. If a car is going 100 miles an hour and it puts on the brakes, it doesn't just stop immediately. If it stops immediately, usually you're dead. That means you ran into a wall. You know, let's just be gentle about it and learn about this rather than having some idea. Oh, it says in the books there, rapture and maybe tears coming out of joy. And whatever we've read in the books, fine, but this is how it is now. That's a wonderful mantra. This is how it is. This is how it is. And so if there's heaviness, maybe we've been running on nervous energy, because we have to do things at home. And we come here, maybe we realize how tired we are. Rather than making judgments about ourselves, about anyone else, we acknowledge this is how it is. And can we receive that feeling then? Be with. Encourage the mind to have the capacity, not just to run away, but the capacity to experience fatigue, if that's what it is. What is the sensation of fatigue? Knowing it, breathing into it, sensing where it's heavy, where it's hot, where it's numb. Moments of being with, holding, staying with. That's what little by little allows the karma, the vipaka karma, the resultant karma of how we've lived. That's what allows that to little by little be turned and transformed. Maybe we're very restless because modern life in cities with emails and telephones and computers and duties and jobs in the day and jobs at night. People work hard in this country. I noticed from some people I've met. So that requires a lot of movement. So if we're having to do a lot of things and we sit down, maybe we notice restlessness. Again, this is how it is. The nervous system's kind of firing over here, firing over there, firing up there. Then we just, can we cultivate the capacity to be with that? This is how it is vitakka. That means that's a thought that helps bring us here. This is how it is. I'm sitting. Restless. Then the vichara, the receptive, the mind that actually then makes contact, explores, receives the qualities, the nuances, the vibrations, the shapes, the textures of how we are. If we just shouted our restlessness, be still, might work. But usually we can't just kind of intimidate the heart, force the heart. We can encourage, be patient. So whatever the qualities that you experience as we sit here eyeball to eyeball with our karma, with what we've, you know, for each of us it's a little different. We have the opportunity to courageously, to kindly remind ourselves, for now I don't want to just avoid anything. I want to cultivate the capacity to find a refuge in the present moment, refuge in being with how it is, encouraging ourselves to open. particular practice that we've been doing today, I think I mentioned earlier in the day that it was the practice that our teacher, the Buddha, 2,500 some odd years ago, this was the practice that was fundamental on his night of enlightenment. You might already know the story, but it might be nice for me to reflect on it again for you. I suppose you know that the Buddha came from a royal family. He was a young prince. His father was a king or a chief of a certain clan in modern-day Nepal. It was in that part of the world. And he grew up in a very luxurious setting. He had a different palace for each season of the year. Some people had given, some wise seers had given predictions to his father, the king, that the son might go off and be a seeker or a monk or something, and the father wanted his son to be a great king. So he didn't want his son to see suffering. So for the hot season, they had a palace up in the cool, probably up in the hills like this. In the cold season, he had a palace that was lower down and warmer. He had palaces in the different hot season, cold season, I guess the rainy season. And that there was a certain point in the young prince's life where he somehow recognized that just pleasure in and of itself wasn't the goal of life. Something penetrated into his heart. Somehow he recognized that he too, he said, the vanity of youth left me, when he really realized that he too, even though he was young and handsome, he too would undergo old age, sickness, and death. At some point in the young prince's life, when he was 29, these truths, what were called heavenly messengers, penetrated the heart of the prince. He came across an old being, a sick being, and for the first time a corpse. For the first time it really went into his heart that this too, this being that I call myself, is subject. No point in me being ashamed of something I don't want to look at. That's nature. This too is subject to that. Anyway, that's not the point of my story tonight, but he went and he left the palace, much to the lamentation of his parents and of his wife. He went out seeking, and he studied with the great yogis of the time. And in that particular time, the yogis were very good at getting out of the body, going to very high, refined states. He went through that practice for some years, attained some skill at it, but still realized he kept coming down. Came back down to the body. Then he went through a state where he thought, the problem is the body. He went through a period of time where he thought, it's because this body and its pleasures that's holding me back. So he tortured himself, forced himself to eat very little, to wear harsh clothing like bark, sleeping in nettles and briars and things like that. What's called ascetic practice, really, really severe ascetic practice. Eating very little, got very weak, and then he realized that no one could be more patient than him, no one could be more equanimous to pain than him. His mind was strong, but there was no peace. Now, what I wanted to touch on tonight was the memory that he had. He then realized this is not working. And then he remembered when he was a child, at a plowing festival of his father, the king. It was a big festival for planting the seeds. A lot of activity when he was young. He then withdrew. He just left all the activity, all the merrymaking, all the people that were interacting in various ways. He withdrew up a little bit away underneath a rose apple tree when he was a child. So he withdrew from all the activity of the kingdom. Not through big hatred, but just withdrew, sat down under the tree, and with the innocence of a child, he just allowed his attention to be with his body, allowed his attention to be with the breath, and he entered a deep state of calm. All these years later, then, when he was in the midst of practicing these very severe practices, undergoing a lot of pain and feeling like he was then going to deserve enlightenment because he was hurting so much and he was so patient. All these years later, when he felt very frustrated and knew that something wasn't working, then he had that memory of the child, just withdrawing and very naturally allowing the attention to settle right here with the body, not trying to go way high. Not trying to just seek out all that is most pleasing out there through the eye or through the ear or through contact with the skin. But just very simply allowing the attention to be in a very childlike, open way with this natural process. Experienced something very pleasing. When that memory came back to the Buddha to be, he realized that's a blameless pleasure. Why? That doesn't harm anybody. That's not exploiting anybody. Breathing. It's not taking something from somebody else. He says, why am I afraid of that? He reflected, yes, if I attach to that, if I always want to be in that state, okay, there can be some suffering if I attach to it unduly. But he said, it's not bad, it's not dangerous. And then he had the insight, this is the path I need to take. But in this state that I'm in, I can't do it, because he was too weak. So at that point, he allowed himself to eat properly. He received an offering. In the life story of the Buddha, he received an offering from the maiden, Sujata. She gave him some rice, milk rice. So it wasn't a question of hating the body, trying to get rid of the body, trying to get away from the body. But it wasn't a question of just being a slave to the body. That's why I call it the middle way. It's a question of honoring the body. What does it need? What is too much? What is too little? He'd been starving it. He needed some proper nourishment. He'd been torturing it. Or he'd been trying to get away from it. The insight that he had was, what if I just honor this body for what it is? And so after he'd regained some strength and then was able to start to practice, then he did just the practice that we're cultivating today. And so I would like to continue talking some about what he discovered about a skillful way to do this particular practice. Sitting down, establishing presence of mind with the body, being with the breath, knowing when the breath is long, knowing when there's a long breath, being with, being aware of how the breath is, knowing when the breath is short, training ourselves to be sensitive to the entire body breathing, coaxing the body from being dead, coaxing the body into being awake, the sensation of the whole body breathing. Sometimes we can be so much in our head we can't even find our breath. So it takes some encouragement to start to noticing any sensations of the fact that we're receiving this vital principle. At first we might just notice a brushing at the nostril. We might at first only notice that the chest is moving a bit, and we can feel the clothing, the sensation of the clothing. Or we might just notice that the abdomen is moving a bit. But actually the whole body is breathing. The element of the breath is called the Vayo Dhatu. It's called the air element. That means the element of nature which vibrates. The breath element, as we breathe in, it gives the vibratory quality to the body. There's an image which an analogy, an image which the Buddha gave his disciples that encouraged them to reflect on this image, to give us an example of how we should train this body in being with the breathing. He used the analogy of the bathman's apprentice. It's an old analogy, so I don't think they have them in the societies we have nowadays, but in the old days, in different countries, if somebody wanted a bath, they would go somewhere where people were boiling water, had hot water. And so a bathman, that means somebody who was, their job was to help provide that for somebody. And he would talk about this bathman apprentice had a beautiful bowl, beautiful brass bowl. And also had powder, dry powder, soap powder. But it's dry crystals. And he talked about the bathman's apprentice taking water and sprinkling the dry crystals, and then working this ball of crystals, working it. Little by little, the moisture going into all the crystals, all the dry bits of the crystals, so that little by little it becomes a ball, permeating, the moisture permeating, suffusing, penetrating all the dry bits, so that little by little the dry crystal becomes filled with moisture, filled with water. But it doesn't drip, it holds it, it holds it, it holds it, it holds it. It becomes a very special substance that can cleanse. Very lovely as it's moved. Now this analogy, and then the Buddha talked about that when it's been really worked well by a skilled bathman's apprentice, then there's no part of that ball that's not soaked, permeated with moisture. So the dryness and the moisture have come together and mixed and become blended perfectly. Now in this particular analogy, the brass bowl, the lovely brass, which is a lovely element, bowl, is the heart. It's our awareness. Awareness. The dry crystals is like the body. When our body is not awake, when our body is not filled with presence, when we're so worried about the future and worried about the past and trying to get jobs done, sometimes our body can become, as we know, tense and tight, and we can become disconnected and fragmented. So an analogy for that is dry. distraught. So our moments of presence, our moments of awareness, the awareness is like the sprinkling the moisture, the moment of being aware of the head. Vitaka says, here I am sitting, brings the mind. Vichara then receives the tension in the forehead. Maybe we can feel that. And on an out-breath, just slowly soothe the forehead. Breathing in, soothing the shoulder. That's little bits of awareness, little bits of like moisture in the dryness of the crystals. As we sit here, little by little, the awareness penetrates the knees, penetrates the abdomen, penetrates the face, little by little, little by little, little by little. In the Bathman's apprentice, it's his hands that work the moisture into the ball. With this analogy, it's the breath. The breath comes. The breath goes. It's like standing by the sea. You stood by the sea. In Africa, it's very powerful waves. I'm not quite sure about the... But there's waves on the Mediterranean, too. Waves come in. And they're coming in. It's like the in-breath. Coming out, soothing the sand. Smoothing the sand. Coming in. Coming out. So, breathing in. At first... If we're not really in touch with our body and breath, maybe it's good to have a long breath. Not a big, powerful, strenuous one, but just so we find the body, breathing in, just noticing that the air touches the mouth or the nostrils. Just noticing that. Don't be afraid to even follow the air to the chest, to the abdomen, just so we get a feeling of the whole body. So our teacher used to encourage us to breathe consciously at first, here. On the in-breath, and then let it come out. In-breath at the nostrils, then the chest, then the abdomen, out-breath. It's just so we just get a feeling of sensing how the whole body's breathing. Just like the waves coming in and the waves going out. As we breathe in, just noticing any sensation. Noticing the rhythms, being with the rhythms. Then the attention goes away, then the vitaka, the directing mind, like a thought says, I'm sitting. A thought says, I'm breathing in, breathing out. Then the receptive mind, again, feels the breath. Holds the breath, stays with the breath, adjusting, relaxing, noticing areas that are numb, noticing areas that are painful and tense. So as we stay with the in-breath, stay with the out-breath, allow ourselves, even the bits that don't feel good, allowing the attention like the Bathman's apprentice. Instead of the hands, it's the breath in our awareness that holds. So the Buddha described that when we practice in this way, then little by little, just like the moisture fills the ball of dry powder, then the breath suffuses, permeates, spreads through every part of the body with a quality of ease. The first two factors we looked at a bit today that support this samadhi, I called it directed thought and receptive thought. For the third factor, which is called pitti, in the language the Buddha spoke, it's sometimes translated as rapture. Now sometimes we see that word and we just think, oh, rapture, right? Because it's, do y'all have that word, rapture? I don't know what it means. Sometimes in English it sounds like something so high, it sounds so ecstatic, so wonderful that sometimes we look too far away, rapture. I would like us to look at the seed of that word, how that quality begins, and really what that word is pointing to is being filled by. It means allowing yourself to be a space to enjoy something. It's an easier word, an easier entrance into it, is to enjoy. Sometimes if we're practicing wanting to get to those states, we're leaning, trying to get there. That's not being filled. That's when the mind is very pointed and trying to get somewhere. And rapture doesn't build up. Joy doesn't build up. This quality is when we learn how to savor, how to taste, how to enjoy being with the quality that's there. So, however it is for us, as we bring the mind here, as we receive that, then we develop this third factor when we allow ourselves to enjoy. To enjoy just being with an in-breath. To enjoy being with an out-breath, just as it is, even if it isn't perfect. Breathe in. Breathe out, and then allow the breath energy, allow the sensations to suffuse, so allowing the attention to, as we breathe in and breathe out, allowing the attention to check how the hand is, to check how the hand is, to check how the legs are. So the attention is little by little holding the edges of the body, breathing into the heart, relaxing as we breathe out. Little by little. There might be some bits that aren't comfortable. We notice those. We breathe into those. But we still enjoy the simplicity of being able just to be present. The fourth factor is sukha, which means it's sometimes translated as happiness. What that really means is, can we be at ease? Can we relax? Rather than, again, trying to get somewhere. If you're trying to get somewhere, that blocks this quality. It's useful to remind ourselves to relax. These qualities, this welling up of ease and pleasure, come from not trying to get somewhere else. It comes from relaxing more and more deeply into being here. Urge us to be very patient with this practice. Maybe at first even allowing the breath to be long, even allowing the attention to move with the breath. And then as we calm down a little bit, perhaps the center of the breath will settle. We might find one particular part of the body that's calling us more than another. We don't have to exclude anything else, but you know, perhaps we'll be watching the breath here, or being with the breath here. But still we share the energy of the breath with the whole body. We don't have to limit and contract ourselves to one part of the body. The Buddha encouraged us to share the blessing of the breath with the whole body. But then there comes a time when perhaps you don't want to move so much around the body. Little by little one stabilizes the attention. The awareness is still broad, but the center of the attention maybe is located, possibly at the nostrils, possibly at the heart, wherever feels comfortable. The awareness, though, is still broad. And as we breathe in, just noticing the ripple, the subtle feeling tones and energies of the breath, the movements of the breath, continuing to relax. Then allowing the mind and the body to dance. They become unified. The last quality that supports calm is what's called ekagata, or unification. It's single. It's not me watching the breath, me doing the breath. It's just being with, being at home with breath. The mind and the body are joined. Just being with breathing. Encourage us not to be too judgmental of how it's going. If little by little for the rest of our life we cultivate a few minutes when we have an opportunity, a few minutes of actually learning to go on holiday, learning to, if you're standing in the line, if you're waiting for something, sitting somewhere rather than having to think, having to do this. Actually, in the course of a lifetime, if one practices little by little, one can actually learn to enjoy just being with the body, being with the breathing, being with relaxing. That is a blessing in and of itself, an ease in and of itself, a refuge in and of itself. And as we'll look in the next few days, the retreat, later on in the retreat, we'll also explore how from this very same abiding, just being with breath, one can also use that power of presence to see the nature of things. To see the nature of our worries, the nature of our doubts. See the stress and suffering that comes from trying to make things stable that aren't stable. And from this same breath, from this same activity as the Buddha did on the night of his enlightenment, we can recognize that there's all that arises ceases. Whether it's daytime or nighttime or an in-breath or an out-breath, things keep arising and ceasing and melting, continually melting into presence. Melting back into that which has always been here. Discovered the most unexpected thing was that what he had been searching so long for, trying so hard to get to, was that which it was so close, that which is we're already immersed in, the peacefulness of the present. Fortune for Tanissa and myself to be able to practice together with you all, and I deeply believe and trust that what we're doing here is a blessing for everyone, is a blessing for our families, even though they might be far away. So I really do encourage you to trust that this is not an easy activity, to be eyeball to eyeball with all our tendencies, with all the things that when not seen clearly can lead to so much fighting, so much confusion, so much suffering. I encourage us to continue with this work and to trust that it really is a source of blessings that we can share for the welfare of this country, the welfare of this planet, and the welfare of all beings.